You may have played poker, but playing poker in Texas is a different animal. This is the Texas Poker Podcast with Tyler and Clint.
Hello, this is the Texas Poker Podcast. I'm Tyler, this is Clint.
What's up, y'all?
We are back with a new episode.
So, we ended up playing at Paramount. We haven't been there in a long time, and it's definitely one of my favorite rooms.
Oh, I mean, like I was telling you when we left, I mean, it had been a minute since I'd been there, but I forgot how much I actually like that room. It's kind of, I don't want to say I forgot about it, but I just haven't been playing as much as I used to, and it's just kind of, I left there and was like, oh man, I need to come back here a little bit more often.
Yeah, it's, well, like I say, the bankroll's increased enough to where I'm trying to play bigger games, and Paramount's not known for the bigger games, but well,
it's the opposite. It's more designed for a smaller game, right?
Which I think we need that in Houston very badly.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think it's great to have. So
I tell you what, when my bankroll was on fumes like 2 years ago, freaking loved having it.
It was kind of deep stack for me.
Yeah. I've always enjoyed kind of the feel there. It's definitely one of the biggest rooms. It's got like the pool tables and all that. So I don't know. It was nice to be back after kind of a delayed, after we hadn't been there in a while.
Right. Well, actually, I had been there, what, like 2 weeks ago? Because you were the one who hadn't been there in so long.
I think I'd been there like 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's just not a place it used to be the place I played at the most, and now it's kind of like more hit and miss.
Right, because you said you were looking at your tracker, and it's like number one on hours by far, right?
Oh, it was crushing everything for a long time. It was definitely my main go-to for quite a while.
Yeah, but I mean, so we had a pretty good action table for sure. They only had one table going, which was a little weird, but I guess we did show up pretty late, right?
Yeah, because we showed up like probably around midnight or so, a little after.
Right. So, table's been kind of call happy, pretty actiony table. I have my first interesting hand, though. I get ace, king of spades, and I'm under the gun two, and there's a $5 button straddle. So the small blind calls the five, the big blind calls the five, under the gun fold. I make it 15. I've been making it 10 all night. So my thought is, I don't want to, as odd as it sounds, like I understand when there's more dead money, you obviously make it more just to, you know, win that money.
Right.
But I feel like a lot of recreational players, whenever you make it a bigger amount than normal, even if there's dead money, they don't see it like that you're getting the money that's in the pot as far as like the strength of your hand is more, so you're betting more.
So you're just saying they're more likely to fold to your big hand. They're not, yeah, they're just, yeah, you're kind of not getting action with your big hands as much. They're just seeing the raise size.
Well, whenever, like, when you have a big hand and there's a bunch of limps, you're not getting action, which is kind of the situation. Because like we were talking about, I would normally have made it a little bit more, but I was a little worried about not getting action. So I make it 15, but I get four callers, which a little worried.
Yeah, but I mean, this is a hand that kind of, I don't really mind four ways because I think it's going to play fairly well multi-way as long as it, I mean, if I can flop an ace king and it's not a real connected board or two spades, I'm not loving, I mean, I kind of either want four callers or heads up kind of actually.
Oh, definitely. So I'm sitting like, well, I hope I hit. I mean, right in the window, I see a five of spades. I'm like, well, that's a start.
Okay.
And I basically get the best flop I can get without actually flopping anything. As weird as this is going to sound. I was not first to act because the guy donked into me. That's right.
Well, you didn't say you were first to act. You said under the gun plus two, and you said there were limpers in before you.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. He was in the small blind. Man, I was just assuming I would get checked too. Man, that's how much respect I thought I would get at the preflop raiser. But all this is checking out now. The flop comes the five of spades, jack of spades, ten of clubs, which is kind of the best flop, like I said, you can really ask for without actually hitting an ace or a king, right?
Oh, I mean, this is a dream flop. So you flopped a nut flush draw with two overs and a gutter.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a flop dreams are made of. I'm definitely playing this one pretty hard, I think.
So I get led into for 25 in a call. So I raise to 100. Other guy folds. And the guy calls at 100. The other guy folds. So now it's heads up to the turn. And I hit the queen of diamonds for the nuts.
I mean, it's really nice to like. I mean, this should be. It just became a much less stressful hand on that turn.
Yeah. I bet 100. He checks. I bet 100. He calls the 100. The river is like a 9 of clubs, so there's no flush. I have the nut straight. He checks. I go all in. He snap calls. So I was like, well, this is weird. I show my hand, and he shows queen 9 for river 2 pair. So we flopped open-ended with the queen 9 and then hit runner-runner 2 pair.
Yeah, and I mean, and this player was a very, very recreational player, was what I was kind of getting out of this player.
For sure, but the all-in was not, I mean, because I made it 100 on the flop, 100 on the turn, and his all-in was less than 200.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, quite a bit less than pot, given all the other action. But, I mean, like you and I always talk about, though, that kind of shows the importance of raising your strong hands whenever you're deep stack, because that's a pretty big pot for a 1-2 game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, with super strong draws, like, this is... So, I think there's some draws you should be raising and some you probably shouldn't, but this is just one where, when you just have this much equity, I just love, like, how you played this super aggressively, because, I mean, you definitely have to balance your big hands.
Here's a question. Whenever you say, like, some draws you should be raising and some you shouldn't, would you say that you're only raising, like, your nut draws, or do you just mean, like, kind of in position, or whenever you say that? Because, like, for me, whenever I, like, have, like, a 5-high flush, that's when I raise to protect against, well, I guess that wouldn't be a draw at that point, but what kind of just, would it be raising your nutted hands or redraws to the, you know, like, real, like, nut hands, or kind of, like, seeing your equity with your kind of middling straight draws?
So it's very dependent on how many people are in the pot. I'm definitely raising stuff where I have a flush draw and what you said, like the nutted flush draws, mostly because I feel like an ace is an out sometimes.
That's what I'm about to say. Or are you only raising stuff when you probably have like two overs as well that could be out?
Yeah, something like if it's a flush draw with a gutter, draws where they have a ton of equity, almost like no matter what that person has. I'm usually doing that. I'm going to play the ones where it's heads up more aggressively because I got less showdown value and more likely to get a bluff through.
Kind of one thing that I always think about is like if I'm up against like worst case scenario, like being like top set, do I still have quite a bit of equity, right? With my straight, like if I'm open ended and flush draw, something like that, you know, so that's something that I kind of would kind of think about when I raise my draws.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, I will say this, like, your draw was so strong with two overs, the gutter to the nut, and then a nut flush draw. But sometimes if I have, like, maybe less of a hand, like maybe I've got 7-6 of spades, only really got the flush draw, when there's a bet and a call and I'm getting kind of pretty good odds just to call, I'm more likely just to make that call if I have like not as good of a draw and I'm getting better odds.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But that was a pretty big hand for me.
That was very well played. I like the aggressiveness there.
What'd you say? Just keep saying it. No, I'm kidding. Just run that back in the mic. We're just gonna end it there.
God, no. Complimenting you hurts my soul.
I found my new ringtone. So, but no. So, here's an interesting hand that I played. So, it's a PLO hand, which I know not, you know, not the most popular game, but I've been playing a little bit more PLO, like that last week when I was talking about all the crazy PLO. And I felt like I was playing some of my hands too passively pre-flop, right? And I was kind of like, oh, if I feel like I know that I should be raising certain hands, like three betting with certain hands in PLO. But at the same point, the variance is so much that I mean, just kind of scared for my poor little bankroll. So I was kind of taking the passive route. Well, at 1-2, I'm not taking the passive route. So, so I get ace, ace, king, seven, single suited.
To the ace?
To the ace, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I actually make it 15 to go. Because I was like, well, this would be, you know. And there's quite a few calls, but somebody goes all in for like $50. No problem, right? It goes like, and then one guy calls, another guy goes all in for like 75, and then it's back on me. The one guy who called in between the all in and the 80 or 75 all in is pretty deep stacked, about 200 effective.
Okay.
Or maybe like 250. Like 200 more. He had already called the 50, so 250 effective, I guess it would be.
Okay.
Right. So it's back on me. What are you doing here? So here's, I'll just kind of give you my thoughts of the options, because obviously folding's not one. I flat, he flats. We see this four ways, and, you know, single suited aces. It's going to be close in equity, so I was debating that. Then I was thinking, well, I could re-raise and get him to fold a lot of his weaker hands. And then that 50 would just be dead money. Then I'd just be seeing it three ways. And that's what I did. But what do you think here is from, like, your PLO play?
Well, I'm doing the re-raise, but not because I think it's dead money. I'm just re-raising it for value here.
No, if he folds, it's dead money. But I kind of... Well,
like, PLO low limit, I'm just never expecting a fold. That's where I'm giving, like... I'm not saying it's not dead money. Once I re-raise this, I think it's going to be a call 95% of the time.
Oh, wow. I was definitely thinking it was going to be a fold 95% of the time. And guess what? I raised. He called so fast.
Yeah. I mean, these low-limit PLO games, people just don't have a fold button. But I definitely... I mean, I like the line, though. I think this is a disaster to just call here. Like, it's one thing if y'all have... If y'all are both, like, 2,000 behind, I think you can definitely just call here. Because you're just basically going to set mine with aces or for a flush draw. But if you can get basically his all in there, I think you definitely need to go to get his all in, especially when you have create a side pot to win in case the other players, you know, win, but you can actually beat him. And you know you've got the better hand, so you just, like I say, straight value. So I like your line.
So the flop comes two diamonds and I don't even remember, but I went all in for the other $30 that he had. He snap calls. That's all you actually end up seeing in this hand was me going all in.
Yeah.
And for the $30 more. I turned it over, turned a deuce, rivers a deuce. He had queen... nine of diamonds with queen 8-8 deuce for running deuces to scoop the pot.
Yeah, that's a tough beat, but I mean, I like the way you played every street of it. You got it in as about as good of a favorite. Well, I mean, I guess any diamond, any eight, and you got it in as a favorite and a ton of the money in pre-flop. So you are a huge favorite in this hand. That's the only thing you can do is get the money in when you have a lot of equity and hope you hold.
Yeah, well, I was just happy to hear that that's what you would have done, because I was like kind of debating just all the options. I mean, I even thought about folding for half a second.
So I think given the stack sizes, I think that was by far the correct move. Like I say, if your stack sizes are way deeper, I don't mind just to call. But given the stack sizes, if you can get most most of the money in, I think you should be doing that.
So, do you think, I don't know how I'd phrase it, but maybe not more, I mean, more regular PLO players find a fold there with queen nine or queen 8-8 deuce for an all in? I'm like, are you calling that off? I mean, because I might be playing way too tight.
No. Well, I mean, I will say this. Most, well, I don't know. PLO players in Texas just play seem to play just damn near everything. No.
But I'm saying, like, would you call?
He has queen 8-8 deuce.
Yeah.
No. Well, I wouldn't have called the 50 in the first place.
That's what I thought. I thought so, that was strange.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that. But I think a lot of these players are just going to be like, if you flop a set, you know, you're good or whatever. So, it doesn't... I wouldn't do that, but it didn't... it definitely didn't shock me that, you know, he's doing it. I just... most of these players have no fold button. So, literally, almost nothing people flip over really shocks me anymore.
It's funny. Clint's like, I'm not shocked. And I'm sitting there appalled. I'm like, oh! I'm like, how could this be? I mean, at 200 pre-flop. But, yeah. So, I mean, those are interesting hands, though, at least. Ended up, I was up quite a bit. Ended up dumping, like, $200, like, the last two hands, which one of them was to you. Not a whole 100, but maybe, like, $50 to you. No, it was close to 100 to you. And then another, the one where you hit a turn to flush on me whenever I had ace-queen.
There's no way you lost 100 in that hand, right?
Made it 20 to go pre-flop, bet 50 on the turn, or bet 50 on the flop. You called, everyone folded, so close. 75, I guess.
Well, but, then you owe me $25. You just said you lost $100 to me.
Yeah, either way, I'm one for the dramatics. And then I guess I lost more than 100 on the hand once you got up. So, like literally the hand where you went to cash out, then I lost another like 120. So I was like, but ended up profiting a little bit over 300, which was nice for really not that long of a session.
Yeah, you had a really smooth sell. Like, you were up almost, like, whereas mine was not like yours. I was down almost the entire session and barely just, and then caught at the very end. You seemed to have a very smooth session. Like, you would lose, but you would immediately win it again. Like, you seemed to be up the entire session.
Oh, yeah. I mean, trust me, take it from someone who needs a smooth session.
Yeah, well, you deserved it, but yeah.
I mean, you heard what happened to me last week, so.
That's pretty good. It, like, I had a much more boring session.
I mean, you seem so bored over there.
I was so card dead, man. The only interesting hands, there was one that you were in. I raised preflop. I don't know what position. I would think like somewhat late. It was King Jack off.
We like to call you under the gun.
Yeah, I get two calls. The flop is like King 6-3. I think I got like three or four calls. Because I bet, and then the player calls, and then you call. It's very dry board. It was like King 6 was the middle card, so it might have been a deuce because there wasn't even many straight draws. So once y'all both call, I'm a little curious because there's not much on this board. The turn is a 6, and you check it. I was in the middle position to go. I check it because I'm like, well, a 6 seems available for somebody to have here. And then he checks it behind. And it creates a backdoor flush draw. The flush comes in on the river. I still think I can get value once everybody checks the 6, and there's no reason to put anybody on a backdoor flush draw. I end up betting 25, which is very small into this pot. I get min raise like 50.
I remember what I had here. I had a deuce. I was on a mission to bust you.
Oh, well, I know that flop was a deuce then. It's a...
Well, no, once you corrected to a deuce, I was like, that's right. I thought I was going to be good, and then you called the 50. I was like, well, there's no chance I was good.
And then when you fold, I just call because at this point it's like I'm getting like 25 to win 150, and yeah, I mean I'm almost never good, but people do weird things here. And he hit the backdoor flush draw, but the big question was, would you be betting that turn?
Yes.
Okay, I guess. I mean, I did bet small, so nobody has to have a six there. It just, it struck me as one of the cards that was definitely available for somebody to have.
I don't know. I put that player on, well, definitely not a backdoor flush draw, but yeah, I don't know. I still think that you're probably ahead with your king a lot of the time. But I don't know. I think he could be calling with all sorts of stuff. I mean, I was calling you with a deuce just and praying I hit another deuce so I could win all the money. But
well, it was one of those that when I did bet very small in that flop, and that creates a lot more calling with looser hands.
I mean, trust me, I had a deuce. And I was like, come on. I was like, I'm getting great odds. I was like, I'm one deuce away from having a great story.
So, yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Well, I probably did mess a bet on the turn. That being said, he definitely calls once he hits that flush draw, and I just lose more money.
For sure.
But, yeah, I'm more on that middle card pairing. On such a dry, like, it'd be one thing if it was, like, a wet flop where there's a lot of flush draws. There's a lot of straight draws. But I was like, I mean, I just can't imagine what in God's name anybody has here. I mean, I did think I might be losing value from a worse king since, but I was a little nervous, and I don't know if I should be that nervous in that spot.
In this exact game, I think I just keep betting, but
it's probably a good move.
Because, like, in this exact game, how often are you going to get raised and not be able to make the fold? I mean, I feel like with your exact hand, if you bet and get raised, it's a super easy fold.
Oh, you're completely... Well,
which is...
I mean, I'd actually, my exact hand, I bet, got raised and made a call, so... So, I mean, you want to talk about me being able to prove you wrong, like, literally instantly.
Okay, well.
Tyler's like, my bad. I was mistaking you for a good player.
Well, I more meant on the turn than I did the river.
Yeah, true.
But I mean, also, if you're getting min clicked, I mean, you probably should be calling just on the, like you said, the random chance that he's just doing something out of his mind for a min click. But I mean, like, if you bet 25 there and he makes it 100, it's a super easy fold on the turn.
Oh, 100%.
So that's more what I meant, but.
So yeah, it's a, but that was, I had that hand. I just was kind of card dead. Wasn't catching much. Flopped a set that went runner-runner flush to somebody.
Like four-card flush, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's tough.
Well, actually, it helped me out because he actually turned the actual flush, and then it made it a one-card, like four to the four clubs on the board on the river. So I got in, kind of didn't lost the minimum there. Finally, I get a PLO hand where I raise it. I have king, ace, four. The ace is suited to the king. Raise it. There's a ton of calls, like always. The flop comes 2-3-5.
Rain, or do you have a flush draw?
I don't actually remember. I think there was a flush draw, just not mine.
Clint's like, this is how dumb the hand I was.
This was probably one of the worst played hands I have played in a while. So it's one of those things that the four was not suited to anything. So I was really looking to flop a king or a flush draw and just kind of discarded everything else. So I check, not realizing that I flopped a straight.
Oh, you want to talk about, I was just so confused in this hand. Whenever I saw this hand go down and you said what you had, I was like, huh?
Oh, this is how bad it was. I didn't realize I flopped it until I was telling you about it later. I hadn't even put it together. I just completely was out to lunch in this hand.
Okay, wait, continue though. So you check, get bet?
No, it checks around. If somebody bets, I think I just fold. Because okay. I was so certain. So, like I say, horrible, horribly played hand by me. The turn is a deuce.
Yeah, paired the board for sure.
Yeah. A player bets 38, and I'm like, well, like another deuce would give me probably the best boat. I have all that like going. And then I look in there, and like a king gives me a decent boat. And then I look and notice I have a straight. But at this point, not a great straight. It's the shitty end of a straight on a paired board.
I mean, this just sounds like the start of the story of the guy who goes broke.
Oh, yeah. But this guy bets 38. The pot is gigantic. It's like 150. So, maybe more. I end up just making a call. There was no action on the flop to say that somebody had two pair or a bigger straight. So, and it's a very small bet into the pot. If I get re-raised, it's just a disaster.
Yeah, it's like, take it from the guy who should have had action on the flop.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a clear indicator on people's strength of hand as you wake up and read your hand on the turn.
Yeah.
But, okay, so you called, anyone else call?
Someone jams, but it's for, like, just a tiny amount more. Comes back to me. I just call the tiny amount. We run it twice. One is nothing changes, and the second one actually hit my pocket kings hit the king for a boat on the river. But literally nobody had anything. So I think someone turned a flush draw and was just going with it. But I was actually very good. So.
I mean, almost worked. I mean, it almost got you to fold.
I definitely considered it. Like I say, this shitty end of a straight on a paired board in Omaha, not where you want to be.
Oh, man, what about that one interesting hand where you didn't realize that the action was open? Remember that? That was weird.
The same hand.
Oh, that was that hand.
Yeah, because I had a... Like, if I have an ace with pocket kings, like, it's unlikely someone has aces. So, and I have a suited ace with that. So, when it goes around, like, I make it...
So, what happened? Let's talk about what happened. Because I don't remember exactly what happened, but did you make it 10?
And I made it 10. And someone goes all in for 19. 19.
Yeah.
So, it was a... And then, everybody calls around. I didn't realize somebody gave him a dollar to make it 20.
Right.
Because it comes around to me and I'm like, man, if he had $1 more. Nobody says anything.
Well, I mean, we all saw and he said 20 to you, so it all seemed legit.
Did he say 20 to me?
For sure.
Oh, well, I mean, like I say, out to lunch the entire goddamn hand, man. I don't know what to tell you. I don't even know. The fact that I won this hand is literally makes poker maybe not a game of skill at all. It might be actually slot machines at this point.
Yeah, well, because you were so... Oh, that's why you didn't read your hand. Remember, you were so wrapped up in trying to get your dollar back from the pot that you checked.
That's right, yeah.
That's what it was. I'm like, shut up. It's $20. I was like, quit trying to get your dollar back.
I thought the dealer owed me a dollar.
Yeah.
Times are rough. I mean, we got inflation going on. I mean.
That's right. That's what was going on. The action was on you first, and you were so concerned of getting that dollar out of the pot that you checked your straight.
Well, what did my dollar? I don't know what to tell you.
Right. Because if you knew it was 20, like he said, you would have re-raised.
Yeah, that was definitely...
Well, you probably made the maximum this way.
Yeah, Bobble possibly did. Yeah, that was a...
Maybe it is skill.
Maybe it is skill.
Yeah.
And so, it's a... But yeah, I end up winning that hand, and basically that takes me to above even, to where I made basically after time about $150, which... I mean, not going to break the banks, but I tell you what, I'm never shaking my head at a win at all.
I mean, especially when 75, it was mine right before you left.
Oh, that was the 75. I'm not even spending that 75. It's hanging on the wall in the apartment right now.
I was just so, that hand, I was like, that isn't want that hand. You took my money and left.
And the fact that I did it with a shitty hand, even better.
Oh, right. You had a suited king. That's right. Like
king,
king five.
Four, king four suited.
Yeah.
So as a hand, I shouldn't have even been playing. So I'm definitely glad I took your money with it.
Yeah. Well, I guess. Do you have anything else? Not that much poker today, because it was kind of, or this week, because it was kind of a busy week for both of us, right? I mean, this podcast is getting recorded at 4 a.m.
Oh well, I mean, for upcoming, I'm doing a pretty big tournament.
All right, tomorrow. That's right.
So it's a $600 entry mystery bounty.
What's the top prize for the top bounty? Don't they have a guarantee or something? Or
it did have a guarantee, but when I looked back, it it didn't say it. So it was a pretty big one, but I don't know. I would say it was like 200,000, 250. I have no idea. It's supposed to be a pretty big tournament, is all I know.
Well, 250 guaranteed, right? Not the bounty.
Yeah, I think so.
I was about to say, that'd be quite the bounty. You just win all the money in the
there
tournament.
There is one big bounty that is guaranteed to be at least $20,000.
Okay. But so, perfect. Okay. Well, that would be, I mean, definitely come back and report that you won the tournament. That would be great.
Yeah, won the tournament and drew the bounty. That's what we're going for.
So, this is obviously different than a bounty builder, right? So, at the end of the tournament, does the first place guy get to draw the last bounty and keep it for himself? Is that what the, is that how that works? I think so, right? Because remember, like, maybe in a bounty builder online, that, like, whatever you win, you get to keep your bounty as well. Mm-hmm. So, like, you're playing for that. So, I guess in a mystery bounty, there's going to be one left bounty, so I'm sure you get to draw that.
Yeah, that's true. That is a good point. This will be the first mystery bounty tournament I ever did. Like, when I was at WSOP this past year, when I was sick as shit and it was horrible, I was looking at it, and they were so popular. Like, that win one, everybody was talking about it. There was another one at Aria that was a little bit cheaper that everybody, like, a ton of people were playing.
And is it, I mean, obviously it's because you don't have to run deep in it to win a giant amount. Is that, I mean, is that the big draw, right?
I haven't looked on this, but on the win in Aria, the bounties did not start until day two. So I don't know if it's the, it doesn't, from what I read, it did not specify in this one, but I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work. If that's
well, that'll be interesting. Just when you come back next week to see, was it everyone constantly drawing bounties? But then it's like, I thought I heard someone doing that at one of the rooms around here. But someone drew the grand prize like 10 minutes in, like the crazy bounty.
Yeah, I think I would prefer if it didn't do the bounties until day two, and the bounties were just bigger. Because, I mean, I'd like to see more skill involved, and at least you have to make it to day two to do that.
In a tournament of this size, how many people do you think make it day two?
It's going to be a lot, because there were a ton of flights.
So, like, 100, do you think? Or would it be like...
It's going to be more, I think.
Oh, okay. So, I like mystery bounties on the second day, then. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, because it's going to be... today was Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they had two flights today, two flights tomorrow, and Saturday, and Sunday. So, it's going to be a shitload on day two.
Ah, well, I mean...
Which makes me think that it probably is. You're probably just drawing on day two. That to me, makes the most sense.
100, yeah, because, I mean, you got to think, if you had that many people at the tournament, I mean, you'd just be... Well, I mean, and also, how lame would it be if someone drew the grand prize on the first flight? So it has to be day, it has to be day two. Well, then you wouldn't enter, right? So it has to be day two. Right? Because if you knew,
you're right. If you were, there's no reason to late register.
Right. So it has to be.
Yeah, it definitely does have to be.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure we're talking like the most basic of tournament knowledge to some of the listeners that play tournaments. They're like, who are these guys?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's like first mystery bounty I've ever done. So we're going to see what happens.
Yeah, but we're breaking down basic tournament structure here on Textbook or Podcast.
Yeah. Well, I was trying to, like, I was on the Red Chip forums and I was asking them, I'm like, well, what, you know, I don't really know. I know the push fold and all that for, you know, regular tournaments, but obviously in these tournaments, you have to call lighter because you're going to get, I mean, you have that batted equity. Mm-hmm. I don't know that pushing lighter makes any sense, but I was trying to get like a basic deal and like most of them were like, well, just don't enter. I mean, not because it was my skill level, but just because they didn't like the randomness of it.
That's the funniest.
You said you like to play Overwatch? How about you just go play Overwatch, dipshit?
That's so funny. You just shouldn't enter. Well, that's funny. But here's a thought, though. If you're one of the short stacks and you have, like, aces or kings or something like that, like a really, really good hand, and a lot of people who are still left to act cover you, wouldn't you be more incentivized just to shove just because they might call just with the bounty equity there as well.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
Right, so that
yeah,
might absolutely. Be something. I mean, I know you're definitely not shy about going all in a tournament, so, but just as kind of something else to kind of think about, too.
Yeah, it's, well, I guess it's also dependent on, like, on your stacks. Like, you would have to have, but like you say, well, I mean, what's those, your lower stack sizes, you're going to go all in anyways.
yeah.
But, yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess it could go both ways, because you also not really... You would hate to show too much strength and have a lower stack size fold that might jam over you too.
Well, I guess that's what makes it fun, huh? I guess we'll hear about it next week.
Yeah,
I mean, like those guys on said. The fly. Like those guys said, Clint shouldn't play. God, that's so funny. All right. Well, on that note, we'll talk to you next week.
That was the Texas Poker Podcast. Go ahead and rack up. Add time, and we'll see you next week.